Our next guest is John Christensen. He is the founder and CEO of Highland Private Wealth Management, a boutique financial life management company in Bellevue, Washington. He's also an author, and his latest book is The Wealth Creator's Handbook, A Guide to Maximizing Your Return on Life and Money. John, welcome to Mound Money.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So, John, let's start high level. And just based on the title of your book and the description of your company, I think this is a question that goes right down the fairway for you, which is, you know, what is money, what is wealth, and why is it important in our lives?
Well, I think that money is the fuel that gives us the ability to do the things that we do in our lives. It gives us the freedoms and the choices and the opportunities. And it's something that we all have to deal with and to learn how to manage and maximize, if you will, is what I refer to in the book. So it's something that we all need to be thinking about and are thinking about pretty regularly.
The new book is called The Wealth Creator's Playbook. Who are you talking to in this book?
You know, my experience has been with wealth creators. I do in the book mention the idea that we all are wealth creators at some level. We're either currently in a place where we've created wealth and have an opportunity to benefit from that. You might also be somebody who is aspirational about wealth. You're on the front end of that and are maybe earlier in your stage of creating wealth. You might also be somebody who will inherit wealth at some point in the future and will be dealing with wealth at some later point. And or, as I mentioned in the book, my wife, I believe she's a co-wealth creator with me. So the book is targeted at anybody really who believes they are or will be a wealth creator. And kind of somewhat to your original question about wealth and money, I do talk about this idea that I believe that wealth is more than just our money. I think it really involves the essence of who we are and the gifts that we have and the relationships and a much more holistic picture of our life than just the tangible money that we have in our life.
John, you just shared something interesting. For your personal life, you view your spouse as a co-wealth creator. Talk to us about what that means to you.
Yeah, I mean, I just believe I wouldn't be where I am without her. I think that the company I started, the life we've built, has been a shared partnership. And I believe that her own journey of becoming who she is becoming in the world has influenced and shaped who I've become. And I don't think that I could have done what I've done. She just looks at the world differently than me. I was the one who was in the chair building the company, actually there day in, day out. But the influence of her role in my life and in what we ultimately created has been profound. And so I just believe that she's also interested in these same subjects, and I believe that other co-creators were interested in these subjects and maybe didn't have a voice or didn't feel like they had a voice. But the things that I was talking about were things that they and my wife cared about just as much, just maybe from a different angle.
You know, I'm glad that you used that phrase, the co-wealth creator, because it highlights an area I wanted to talk to you about. You know, people think of money management as a very numbers and quantitative business. I'm in the business as well, so I work for a local firm, Albion Financial Group. That's also a wealth management firm. I've been doing that for a little over 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And I find it's the softer issues that can really move the needle for families. And I noticed that part of your credentials, not only are you a CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, but you were a CPA. You're currently inactive on that license. But the other credential I thought was really interesting is you're a certified professional coach. Talk to us about why that's important in your work.
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for bringing that up, because it really has been the evolution of me, but also where I believe the wealth management and financial advisory industry is going. What I was experiencing was that there was this, we could add value by doing financial planning and managing portfolios, and all those things were really important. And to doing them well was really important, but they were becoming more and more commoditized. And where I found that clients were getting the most value was actually where the money was impacting their life. And it was in those areas that we're not trained as financial advisors. We're just not. We're trained how to tell people what to do. We're trained as consultants almost. You come to me with a problem, and here's the answer. And what I found was that some of these things were issues that were inside of the client. The client had the answer. Who was I to tell them how they should live their life or how this should influence them? And on top of that, I wasn't even skilled to do that. What I found in my own life was that I felt like I had some natural ability, some natural skill. And I thought, well, I'm going to go get some real training. This came out of an interesting interaction I had with a CEO of a company who was selling the business. And I can remember clearly him and his wife were sitting there, and I asked some fairly what I thought was fairly innocuous question, which was something like, so what are you going to do now that you are leaving the company, and what's the next stage of life for you? And the guy got super emotional, and I realized, oh my, I really could, there's harm that could be done by stepping into some of these areas that are emotional for people, where it impacts the money in their kids, where it impacts their identity, where it's impacting other relationships, where it impacts their life, the emotional life. They could have regret. They could have any number of emotions that are places that as advisors, we're just not trained to be. And I felt, you know what, if I'm going to step into this place, and I really felt called to step into that place of being truly a trusted advisor, where I could help hold both somebody's financial life and the importance of that. I'm not minimizing that in any way, but that I could also step in and help facilitate conversations around their life and where that money intersected their life. And so what I tell people a lot now is I really am wearing a couple of hats. And I just try and be much better at saying, okay, now I've got my financial wealth coach hat on that I have the answer for you. Here's the asset allocation I recommend. Here's what I recommend about the, investment solution or whatever that is. And then when I have my advisor coach hat on, that's much more of, no, the answer is in you, and I'm going to help you find it by just asking really good questions, being empathetic, being a great listener, and asking the right empowering question that maybe leads you to the place you need to go.
So the playbook, I assume, combines, and I like the fact that the term playbook comes into play here, because I assume it encompasses both your role as a financial advisor and a coach. We talked a little bit about who you're talking to. Could you share with the audience some of the things that you address in the book?
Yeah, sure. So I talk about, first and foremost, just kind of the definition of success. I mean, at a high level, I talk about the idea that we have to, or I believe we need to redefine success. And what does that mean for each of us in our lives? And so I spend time thinking about and talking about that concept, because, my belief is, and in my own life, I found that defining success only as money and as financial success was just not providing the fulfillment that I wanted. I also talk about just the impact of money on other things in our life, most notably relationships, relationship even to ourselves. What kind of emotional impact is that having, whether it be our emotional intelligence, what I call money EQ, and I talk about that, as well as just identity and isolation and the things that come around money that a lot of times people don't realize. As money grows, we can become more and more isolated from other people, both physically and emotionally isolated, and that leads to, a lot of times, very unhealthy behaviors. And then also just the relationship in our marriage, with other family members, with our kids. So So money kind of has these tentacles that go lots of places. And we all know that. But I wanted just to bring voice to all of that. And then I also just talk about the idea of where I believe fulfillment, living with this concept called living fully that I talk a fair bit about in my life, and wanting to have a life of significance and joy and freedom, and just processing how would you go about doing that if you're not at a place where you feel like you have that and you think there's more and you want more. So all of those are subjects, and thank you for mentioning the playbook concept, because the idea was, you may not be at any one of those spots at this moment in time, but much like any playbook in sports or anything, you've got kind of a guide you can go into and go, oh, I want to think about more about my core values and how my money plays into that. Oh, okay, that's applicable to me right now. So I designed it that way for people to be able to access it based on where they are in life.
So, John, we've spent a fair amount of time now talking about the softer issues of mm-hmm. the work that we do. Let's talk about some of the more quantitative stuff. So Mountain Money airs in Park City. It's a fairly mm-hmm. affluent community. And people, a lot of folks might think, well, you know, they don't have to worry too much about money. They've got plenty of money. And actually, that's never the case, is it? And there's always important decisions that need to be made. You were talking about the CEO that was selling his company and thinking about his kids and the impact on them. You know, one of the things that all of us with children have that we're trying to figure out the best path on is, how do we help them financially when it comes time for college? 529s are popular. I get asked a lot of questions about 529s, which is a way to save for college. I'm sure you do as well. High level, what's your advice on saving for college for your children?
We use, you know, just in the wealth management firm, from a practical standpoint, we think a 529 is kind of the gold standard and an easy way to do that. I think the bigger decision is, how much of college are you going to fund? And are you going to fund that plus graduate school or whatever that is? Are you going to fund that 100%? Or is there going to be some skin in the game for your kids? And so one of the things I do talk in the book about is this idea of, you know, our biggest fear as parents is raising entitled kids. And I think they're, you know, when they're raised in affluence in communities like Park City or Seattle or San Francisco or Boston or whatever, there's really a sense of and I think it's when I did the research I've done with some of the wealth creators I work with, that their biggest fear is raising entitled kids. And so some of these things that we do that are important, which is education is important. We want to make sure that you get an education, but it also can be part of this, I refer to it as, you know, creating almost like a pain-free life for our kids. And so that, to me, is the bigger decision around, are we fully funding that? And if so, what's the reason behind that?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, when I went to school 30, 40 years ago, it was far more practical for students to be able to generate a significant percentage of the cost of education because education was so relatively cheap. And I guess mm-hmm. I guess now, I mean, how much, you know, if you're sending a kid to even a state university, what percentage of what they are going to need can they generate by working during the school year and summers? I mean, can they really make a significant contribution, or is it more about the act of contributing itself rather than the amount?
I think it's what you said at the end there. I think it's really about just being a part of the process. I know in our own, you know, my own life with three kids, we put through, you know, private school, expensive. And I think one of the regrets we have, I think we had our kids work in the summers and be part of, you know, contributing their own spending or whatever. But I don't think we connected them enough to the actual cost of that and what it entailed. It wasn't like we blinded them to it or you know, didn't talk about it. But I do think there, you know, we in all of our lives, in my life, when there's something I'm a part of and I contribute to it, I think we value it more. And that isn't everybody, but I think that's a lot of our life. Yeah. When we've got skin in the game, it just matters more. So I even when parents come in and the best of intentions and it's, oh, yeah, let's fully fund that, let's do graduate school and And there is just an interesting conversation about that. And what kind of a life, one of the questions I ask in the book is, what kind of a lifestyle do you want for your kids? And it is an interesting conversation, because if you are on the nicest street in town, or in the nicest neighborhood in town, or a nice neighborhood in town, pick it, and your kids have grown up that way, we can have a tendency to want to fund the school, and then we just don't want our kids to struggle. We the idea of being, I think it used to be called helicopter parents when we were raising our kids. Now I hear, you know, snowplow parents. I mean, just get anything out of the way. And we're just going to get, you know, it's kind of that whole college cheating thing that's been going on. You know, we're just going to get whatever is in our kids' way and make sure they're successful. And I don't see that as being what the successful wealth creator parents are doing. They're, yes, providing opportunities for their kids. They're providing the best things that their kids can be involved in, but they're also requiring their kids to be involved in the process, to work, to contribute, to find their place of contribution, to those are all, because that's their people's fear. You know, if you built the wealth, especially if you're a first generation wealth creator, your biggest fear is, how am I going to transfer that kind of grit and persistence to my kids, who probably have it easier than I had it? And so that's where I think the angst is for most parents.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest challenges, right, is the life experiences of the families that you and I work with, the founders of these companies, is quite a bit different than their kids. So you said something about, you know, us not wanting our kids to struggle. Frankly, as a parent myself, I do want my kids to struggle. I want them to succeed. I want them to overcome those struggles, but I want them to have that experience. And it leads to my next question, which is, you know, we are very fortunate in our business. I work with about 500 different families, and I get to learn from each of those 500 families. You mentioned being a consultant, and I think that's one of the most valuable parts of my experience set, is having worked with 500 families through a long period of time and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And so finding a financial advisor that can help guide you through life, I think, is a really, really important question. Talk to our audience about what they should look for in a financial advisor. And a lot of folks may not understand the difference between fee-only, fiduciary, and the suitability standard. And is that something that's important?
Yeah, there's just a gob there that you mentioned, as you know. But, I think it is a huge decision to pick the person that really is going to help partner with you and your family. And I don't think the idea is to go spread the money around a whole bunch of different places, kind of a cheap version of diversification. I think that's just craziness. But I think it is, spend time to take the time. Even if you feel like I was talking to somebody recently who told me, you know, I got to make this decision. And I said, why? You know, I mean, this is a really important decision. Take some time to think about it. Get to know the person. Find out, where are their conflicts of interest? How are they paid? That doesn't mean if they are paid by commissions, that's somehow horrible. But just understand that and make sure you're comfortable with where those conflicts are and where they're paid. We're all conflicted in the financial services industry somewhere. I don't care what, you know, somebody says. We just are. And it's just a matter of degree. And so I think that's where it starts. It also is kind of, where is this person from a skill set standpoint? Can they be both a tactical person for me, handle the practical things I need to get done and do that with excellence, but can they also come alongside me and help me where my money is intersecting with my life? Are they the kind of person that I'm going to trust and respect as I come alongside them? And are they going to know the difference between when this is something they need to kind of ask me a good question about, and listen well? Are they a good listener? I think that skill is way, way underappreciated in the financial services industry. We love to talk, and we just don't listen very well. And so are you able to listen and be listened to and have somebody really ask you some great questions? So those would be a couple of things. And maybe the last one I would just say is, do they inspire you? Do they inspire you to either through their own life? Some of why I wrote this book was to tell my own story and my own journey as inspiration. I want my life to matter. I want it to be significant. I want to motivate and encourage people to also live lives of significance. And so are they somebody you see as a model for yourself, as being somebody you'd go, oh, wow, they're actually living it out. They're not just telling me what to do, but not doing it themselves. I think those are just a couple things that I would say are important attributes from my perspective.
Well, those were some great points. Our guest this morning has been John Christensen. He is the founder and CEO of Highland Private Wealth Management, a boutique financial life management company based in Bellevue, Washington. He's also an author, and his latest book is The Wealth Creator's Handbook. John, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.